welcome to Inside Scoop Live. Hi, I'm Irene Watson. I'm your host for today. Today I'm really delighted to be speaking on the phone with Donna Marie Thompson. She is the author of Bouncing Back from Loss. She became an expert in bouncing back from loss after her own massive losses within a matter of months. Her mother had Alzheimer's disease and a serious medical error. Her fiancé took advantage of her. She had a severe financial loss when the Florida real estate took a crash, and she suffered a debilitating injury where she couldn't use her right hand for 10 months. But despite of all this, Donna Marie bounced back and is now helping others to bounce back as well. But before we talk to her, I'd like you to know a little bit more about her. Donna Marie Thompson, PhD, the Bouncing Back Now Relationship Coach, is a certified professional coach, a certified NLP practitioner, and a master practitioner of the Energy Leadership Index. Donna Marie is listed as one of America's premier experts in relationships and personal development. She is the host of the Bouncing Back Now show on Blog Talk Radio and on the Real Coaching Radio TV Network. Donna Marie has been the featured guest on many radio shows and on the Brian Tracy TV show as seen on ABC, CBS, NBC, and Fox affiliates across the country. Hi, Donna Marie.
Hi, Irene. How are you?
Great. I'm just really excited to talk about this because, wow, that's a lot of losses in a very short period of time.
Yes, it is. It's completely unexpected, and basically my life took on a new direction based on these losses.
Well, I can well imagine. I mean, this is a matter of just months, and it's that you, gosh, your mother passed away. Your man in your life did some interesting things. I'm just going to kind of put that as that. And your health, you had a health issue as well. So there was just so many things that happened.
Right. I think your body, your mind, body, and spirit are all connected. And given the different assaults that I was facing, the health collapse probably was inevitable in that there's just so much stress that a human body can take. So that was the culmination of it when I had a pinched nerve in my neck.
I would think so, too. And, you know, there are the metaphysical thoughts as to what really, you know, goes on with the neck, and it's something that's happening is a pain in the neck, and obviously there were some things that were in that direction, weren't they?
Oh, absolutely. And I also like the term dis-ease whenever you're talking about that, when life hands you all sorts of things, and if you react to them with unease, given over chronic periods of time, then you can end up with disease. And I think that's really coming out in the research now, how much our health is affected by stress and other stressors and things in our environment.
Yes, and I'm so glad that finally mainstream, you know, medical industry is actually accepting this. You know, some of the areas they are. And actually, like I say, there's research that is proving this is exactly what happened. So what was your life like before all this eruption happened?
Well, my life was absolutely perfect. I was setting up for early retirement.
Mm-hmm.
I was engaged. I was ready to be married. And I was setting off on a whole new adventure, getting out of the corporate world, off the treadmill, off all the pressure, taking off my corporate mask and putting all that stress behind me. So other than my mother's illness, which was rather inevitable, basically my life was pretty much perfect.
And so early retirement meant that you weren't waiting until you were 65 years old or 70, whatever it is now, to retire. But this was, you were going to enjoy life. And so in this early retirement, what was that looking like for you?
Well, I have been working pretty much like a maniac since I was 15 years old. So even though I was approaching 53, which sounded quite young, I had already been working years and years of 60, 65-hour weeks with 100% travel, just amazing, grueling, stressful schedules. So it sounds early, but my body bared the weight of, you know, 35 years of very, very heavy work. So what I was looking to do was to basically just take off all that pressure and begin a new life with the guy I had been with. But he'd been my companion for 17 years.
Wow.
And I was just going to get back in touch with my faith, get in touch with my community, figure out what type of charity work I could do.
Uh-huh.
I was going to get really fit, down to size 6, and just live a wonderful life skating, playing tennis, kayaking, and being of service in whatever way I could.
Uh-huh. And now let's talk about this man that you had been with for 17 years and you were engaged, you married. What happened there?
Well, it's a long story that he had a lot of toxic finances, I call it. He had paid for 3 kids through college. He paid his wife 7 years of alimony, and then he was paying his business partner 10 years to buy out his portion of the business. So I couldn't really attach with him any sooner. His finances were pure toxic. But he was coming out of that, and it just was the perfect timing for both of us just to come into this. And up until the point of the disaster, we were perfect soulmates. We would say things at the same time. We would laugh. We danced. We played tennis. We played golf. I skated. He biked. We kayaked. We did more together than any couple I've ever known. And I truly believe that I had found my soulmate. And we'd worked through dozens and dozens of issues. And I thought that we basically were in our groove. I had an investment property in Florida, and he was looking to move to Florida to sell his business from a tax-free state. And it wasn't my intention, but somehow that's how it ended up, that he became the renter in my investment property, mostly because I was terrified of having a pool. There's all sorts of children have unfortunate ends in pools, and I was terrified to rent a house with a pool. So the main driver was if he would rent my house, I know he would be careful in making sure that, you know, no children were hurt there. So it was purely unintentional. And he had lived in my house. It was about a year and a half, and it was coming up on my retirement day. And I had announced that I was getting ready to sell the house because it had appreciated wonderfully. And it was just the perfect outcome. My retirement date, the house had appreciated, and everything was fine. But at that point, he decided that he was, after all, not selling his business, and I was not selling the house. Now, in any normal situation, that would have been a very short conversation, but at that point, my mother's health had deteriorated horribly. She did have Alzheimer's, then she became the victim of a medical error, and at the time of this crisis, she was on a ventilator, terminally ill, in the ICU. So my choice was, with my mother near death, to forcibly evict my fiancé, my soulmate, the man of my dreams. I just couldn't bring myself to do it, and I thought we could fix it. But it just wasn't fixable. He had dug in, and he had gone off on his own mind, far, far away from me. He spent the last year thinking about how he wasn't going to sell his business. Well, unfortunately, in the worst timing of the universe, he dragged me into the Florida real estate crash. So I lost half the money in that house, and that's my retirement money. So I've subsequently worked 6 years longer to try to earn back the money that I lost. So it all just happened. It was a tidal wave. It was a tsunami of disasters. And when I realized where I was and that I would forcibly have to evict him and there was no way to save the relationship, that's when my pinched nerve came on board. And I was down for about 10 months where I could not use my right hand.
Oh, my.
And I was never sure that I was ever going to get better. So in the abyss and the blues of all of this, I just realized I couldn't afford him, and my health and my wealth were in great jeopardy. So I just decided I was going to sell the house no matter what.
Uh-huh.
And so basically I did, but it was too late. And it was on the market for almost 2 years, but I still lost half the money.
Wow. Well, you know, one good thing is I'm listening to you and thinking about it. It's a good thing that you didn't get married, that this happened before. You know, if you want to look at something that's good that occurred, that this happened all before you were actually married.
Well, true that. I thought I was a reasonably good judge of character, and after 17 years, I had seen him in hundreds of situations, and he was one of the most ethical businessmen in my state, and I just don't know where this monster came from. And many, many people have given me all sorts of theories, and one was courtship behavior. When we became engaged, he then thought that he owned me, my money, my voice, my opinion. There was only one, and that's a very strong controller type, which I had not seen, because he'd been a major supporter of me in my career. And I've had a really troubled career with it. I've been fighting through corporate America, and it's difficult to wage battles in these boardrooms. And so he was always my advocate and always supportive of me. So when he turned on me, I had no idea where it was coming from. And I basically reacted slowly, because I didn't believe that this my soulmate, this person that had stood by me through dozens of other incidents, was now turning directly on me. My opinion didn't matter. Where I wanted to live and where I wanted to retire didn't matter. And that he could decide on his own that he wasn't selling his business without ever discussing it with his fiance, it just went so far out on a limb that the change was too big for me to process, given my mother's condition.
Donna Marie, did you end up beating yourself up for this, that you didn't recognize or see that this coming, being that you are a coach and a certified NLP practitioner? And so, it's easy for us to be in a position of looking at others and seeing things happening in their lives and coaching them through it. But here it is, something that happens in your own life, and you didn't see it. And after you saw what happened and stepped away, did you beat yourself up?
Well, yes. I need to clarify, though. I only became a coach after this. I became an NLP practitioner after this, because I realized I was completely unequipped to deal with this type of behavior, which just knocked me to my knees. So the part of my recovery was the first, when my mother was on the ventilator, I got back in touch with my faith. There was basically nothing I could do. I wanted to be the best care coordinator there was. The second pillar was I went for the coach training. I had no tools. I had no way to process what was happening to me. I had no way to view it, and I just internalized it all. So that was after the fact. So in the middle of it, of course I beat myself up. And I know now that if it wasn't for my mother's illness and the medical error combined are what really set her down. Her final year was a disaster. She spent 11 or 9 of the last 12 months in the hospital, mostly on a ventilator. And it was just very difficult for me to process, because she would get better, she'd get worse, she'd get better, she'd get worse. And I couldn't really give her good care, because we didn't know what good care constituted. One day we're pulling the plug, the next day she's better. So it was just, I can't even describe to you the emotional toll. And I spent 100% of my time and energy trying to make sure she had the best care. And so his little intervention was on top of that. And I just thought we could make it work. I'm a reconciliation person. One of my core values is, harmony and discussion. We could fix this. But he had dug in so far, and he had lived in Florida for a year and a half without me, and he created his own new life in this new bubble. But he told everybody that it was his house, not my house. So when it came time for me to sell it, I was upending his life. Instead of me joining him, I was ruining his party, and that's how far his mental progression had gone without me, and I was 1,000 miles away. So it was just a very unfortunate set of circumstances. But through the whole thing, I thought we could fix it, because we had fixed so many other things. And we almost fixed it 5 times. As I mentioned in my book, Bouncing Back from Loss, we got back 3 or 4 times where he admitted what he did. He offered to compensate me for my losses. We reconciled several times, but each time he would drift back to this intransigent position where, at the end, he still wanted to marry me, but he wanted me to forget everything that happened. And my $300,000 was just supposed to be a lesson for me, but he wanted to consider us even, and we should just start again and just get married. And it just was utterly ridiculous, his final position. But he still wanted to marry me. I'm like, well, I'm not that stupid. So.
Yeah, and, you know, like you say, you're not that stupid, and even you were able to keep yourself very focused during all these things that were going on, for lack of another word, you know, because that was just a lot of emotional turmoil, but yet you were able to stay focused and say, no, this is not going to work, and so I applaud you on that. So, wow, you really, really hit the bottom. And I know that our listening audience is going to say, okay, so she hit bottom, but then what happened? There you are in this bottom. So how did it feel like? And, you know, where were you? What were you doing?
Well, I was utterly, completely devastated. I consider myself somewhat of an athlete. I play tennis, I kayak, and I skate. I do all sorts of things. And then now I can't even use my right hand.
Mm-hmm.
And so the first thing I did was ask him to leave. And I said, look, we're engaged, but you were engaged to a person who's whole. I could be a cripple. I mean, I really couldn't use my hand. I said, why don't you just go and find someone new? And what the underlying premise was that is I just really wanted to sell my house. I just really wanted to do no more business with him, get him out of there. And if I could use my health to do it and let him walk away, then that would be fine. But he was so comfortable in my house that he wasn't going to. It was just too easy. And at that point, it was still before the real estate crash. So if there were 10 or 12 times that things could have turned out differently, but literally it turned into the perfect storm with the most utterly devastating timing you can imagine. So I was totally, totally demoralized that I would work half days and I had to have someone type for me. Can you imagine an office environment where you're standing there and someone is typing for you?
Oh.
And we tried some voice recognition software, but it just didn't work very well. So I really feel for some of the people who have a physical handicap that can't actually work using some of the tools I tried. So I didn't see the end. I saw complete blackness. And somehow, I guess, with the loss of my mother and with me rekindling my faith, I think that opened the window for me to get back on my feet. And it is probably some sort of miracle where I did find the coach training. And people have talked to me and say, why did you just go to a coach? And I said, well, no, I went to coach training. I want the tools. I don't have any mechanisms to have people. I was always looking to be validated by others. I was always trying to get approval from others. And I didn't even know any other way to live. So being a professional coach and going through that training has given me an incredible array of tools. I just wish I had them 30, 40 years earlier. I'm glad I have them now, but it was just really, really pulling me out of the blackness between the getting back in touch with my faith and taking the coach training. And then now that I'm in this environment of coaches, all of my friends and colleagues and just my whole circle has changed. Everybody's positive. Everybody's encouraging. And it's just an entirely different way to live. And I'm just so excited. I'm just so proud to be a coach.
That's great. And, you know, as a coach, you've got such a huge umbrella that you can work under. And the thing is, too, as I'm listening to what your experience is, it's like your experience, although as tough as it was when you were in it and the bottom that you had to go through, it's invaluable now when you are working with others.
Oh, absolutely. There's nobody that questions my credibility.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You know, because you've been there. You've done that. You even have the T-shirt, I'm sure.
Yeah, and the mug and the hat, yeah.
That's right.
And, well, one of the things that's really cool is in the book, Bouncing Back from Loss, I do go through, like, dealing with elder care. And I thought I could handle anything. But elder care is infinitely complex and infinitely contradictory. And I'm a reasonably smart person, but I couldn't sort through it. I had 10 doctors with 10 opinions, and it was just very difficult. So there's a whole section in my book on elder care, and I'm actually going out to Las Vegas to speak at a conference on caregivers.
Great.
And so that's one dimension of the help. The other piece is because of the prominence of relationships in people's lives, I've actually focused now on becoming a relationship coach. And I'm known as the Bouncing Back Now Relationship Coach. And I do daily blogs and things on that topic. Uh-huh. And I have a breakup workbook and other things like that. So I've gone really deep into relationships because that's what people seem to be interested in.
Exactly.
I also have a very deep financial loss, and I'm a CPA.
Uh-huh.
So I also work with business people and other people in financial losses. So there's just many, many dimensions of this. And then my physical recovery. I had 40 physical therapies and 10 occupational therapies and 2 shots in my spine.
Uh-huh.
And so I work with people that are trying to recover from physical injury. So the Bouncing Back From Loss platform is enormous, and it's a kind of a parody on life. It basically reflects what people are going through.
Exactly.
And what's absolutely amazing is now I run into people all over. Every airplane I'm on, I run into people who've suffered 1 and 2 and multiple losses. And instantly we've got this karma going on because my experience is a universal experience.
Well, and right now, financial losses. I mean, you know, with the economy as it is, this is our city. Financial losses, you know, no jobs. People are losing their homes. Of course, this is just exactly where you need to be to help these people.
Yes, and I guess the key dimensions of it are moving forward and having hope. Because when I was down in the abyss, I was a total victim. I curled up in a ball, and I could have stayed there. But each day, nothing changed. It just, if curling up in a ball and being a victim did any good, if I write you a prescription and say, curl up in a ball and cry for 30 days, and if at the end you would come out with some kind of solution or something better, I would write you that prescription. But it doesn't work. So I'm encouraging anyone who's suffering a loss or anybody who knows anyone from suffering a loss is to just try to get your feet under you and just have some hope, because staying where you are today is like yesterday, and tomorrow is like today, and there will be no change. The passage of time, that's one of the things I was really happy with my coaching program, is just the passage of time basically does nothing. If you don't do the work, if you don't find the lessons and do the healing, if you don't take action, the passage of time is just the passage of time. Each time you turn to a new month, there's nothing different. And so that's what the coach training taught me, is that I was in control, and I never knew that. I never knew that I controlled my thoughts or my feelings or my actions. I thought I was I was on autopilot, and I found now about 85% of the people are on autopilot 85% of the time.
It's so higher. So, Donna Marie, the moment that, you know, here you are at that bottom, and there has to be that moment when it's like, light goes on or something happens, and it's like, whoa, okay, I've hit bottom. Now I am ready to make the change. What did that moment look like to you?
Well, I guess it's kind of cliche, but at the darkest hour,
Yeah. That's
when you see the light. I knew that doing more of the same was going to get me nowhere. I couldn't be any sadder. I couldn't be any more hopeless. I couldn't be any lower, but it just wasn't doing anything. I thought if I suffered enough that it would just work its way out.
Mm-hmm.
And none of those things worked. And so I guess I'm analytical enough to know, and the Einstein quote is, just keep doing what you're doing, you're going to get the same thing.
Yeah.
And to expect a different result is the definition of insanity. So you can't keep doing the same thing and expect, you know, your life to change.
Mm-hmm.
You need to do something for a new tomorrow. So it just was the culmination. I was sick and tired of being sick and tired. And it was so black and so dark, and nothing was changing. And I just said, wait a minute, I've survived a zillion things. You know, this is not going to be the end of me. So you need a little bit of anger, a little bit of energy. And then once you get that, you can then channel that anger and energy into your recovery, into a good foundation.
And one thing I had heard you say earlier, too, that you have faith, and that was really important for you, and I'm assuming that that also helped you come back.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, who you are now.
Yeah, absolutely.
And we'll be back with more Inside Scoop Live after these important announcements.
Inside Scoop Live is a global internet-based broadcast specializing in interviewing published authors about their current books and areas of expertise. I'm Juanita Watson, the host of the show, and invite you to join me as I bring to the air both well-known and upcoming writers. You will hear my guests talk candidly about their books, their life experience, specific topics, and the business of being an author in today's literary world. Always interesting and current, my intention is to bring our audience high-quality discussions that spotlight a vast diversity of authors in the field today. Our interviews are syndicated and archived for availability 24/7 through direct podcast and MP3 download. And as always, I love to hear from listeners. Have a look at our website, InsideScoopLive.com. Send me an email, comment on previous guests, and let me know who you'd like to hear on the show. I'll do my best to bring you your favorite authors live and direct.
Welcome back to Inside Scoop Live. Today I'm talking with Donna Marie Thompson, author of Bouncing Back from Loss. As you've heard so far, her life has been, shall we say, interesting? I often wonder how a human being can actually live through devastation as she has. However, we also know that bouncing back is possible, and definitely Donna Marie is a prime example. Stay tuned because there is more. And Donna Marie will be sharing with us the 5 E's to recovery, a system that really worked for her.
I had been drifting for the past 40 years or so. I was raised in a private school environment with high discipline, but I didn't understand the basics of the faith. I didn't understand the messages, and so I basically drifted, went to college, and I just basically lost it. And when my mother suffered the medical error, I had already gone through 2 years of a little bit of Alzheimer's care and then moving her out of her home and getting her set up, and I handled that reasonably well. But the medical error, after 5 months in assisted living, they almost killed her. And it's like, my goodness, I'm the one who put her there. I'm the one that organized all this. And there she is. One minute she's happy and reasonably healthy, and the next minute she's on the brink. And I was just sitting there, and I said, I need to get back in touch with my faith. And I didn't pray for a specific outcome. I only begged that I could be the best care coordinator that I could be, because there didn't seem to be any answers. There's no right answer. That's what I said before, 10 doctors, 10 opinions. And then every time we thought what was going on, then she would either get better or worse, and she would defy our expectations. Whatever we thought was the course was not. And I was on a roller coaster of such extreme highs and extreme lows. It's just really hard to describe. So my faith actually guided me through, and knowing that I was doing the best I could with the information I had. And that was the only consolation I could give myself.
And obviously to others, too. Donna Marie, what is the 5 E's to recovery?
Well, in my search, because I was just desperately seeking at the bottom, I was going through hundreds of articles and books and teleseminars and everything I could get my hands on to say, what do you do to recover? And so what I did was I picked through and selected what I thought worked and discarded all the rest, and I came up with this comprehensive 5 E's to recovery program. And I can go through them if you'd like.
Sure, please do.
All right, the first E is explore what happened. And this is a fun E because I was extremely resistant to this E. Everybody told me, my goodness, Donna Marie, your story is so amazing, you need to write it down.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, no, I don't need to write my story down. I lived my story. I don't need to write it. I know it. I don't need to write it. And I resisted. Finally, after about the 12th time I heard it, I said, okay, I'll do this. So I wrote my story, a very short story, it's 4 pages, and within 2 weeks, an email comes bopping into my box, and it was from Bouncing Back, Thriving in Changing Times, and it said, would you like to have your story published? So I said, my goodness, first, I don't even want to write my story. Second, I write the thing, and then boom, an instant later, it's published. So I'm just telling you because everyone's going to resist this step, and it's really important. And what writing your story does and exploring what happened does is it clears the slate. It frees your mind. Once it's written down, it's almost like a shopping list. Once it's written down, your mind can push it aside and process further. As long as it's spinning in your head, you're still dealing with it. So I encourage everyone to write it down. And I've got people that wrote, you know, 10 to 15 pages. So anyway, so that's the first E, explore what happened. The second E is eliminate unwanted feelings. Now, when we're in the depths, we feel victimhood. We can feel anger, resentment, guilt, all sorts of feelings. And it's a normal part of grief to deal with them. And I encourage everyone to feel their feelings and go through what they need to go through. But there comes a point in time when you realize that the feelings that you've got are not serving you. So if you continue to be a victim, if you continue to be angry, but it just doesn't get you anywhere, then it's time for you to take over. And I call it, you be the captain of your own feelings. And you can change your feelings. And I have all sorts of exercises in the book where you do imagining. And we can do one now where it's in the middle of winter, but I can say, imagine a sunlit cafe. Imagine a beautiful umbrella. You're outdoors with friends, and all of a sudden you think it's spring. So in 5 seconds, I've just changed your feeling from a wintry day to a spring day. So once you realize that you can control your feelings, you then can begin to catch them earlier and dismiss them earlier. So that's the second E. The third is embrace the situation. And the best way to sum this up is, what is, is. And no amount of undoing and thinking and if only and I wish I would have and I could have and I should have, all of that is in the past. And the past cannot be changed. So you basically are where you are, and what is, is. And as soon as you can accept that, embrace the situation, you're then setting yourself up for your recovery because you are where you are, and you're now going to direct yourself into the fourth E, which is envision your new future. So it's going to be a different future. It's not going to be the same as if your loss had not happened. There's nothing going to make it the way it used to be, but you're in control now, and you can say, here I am. Do I want to go to school? Do I want to move out of state? Do I want to do this? How do I want to live my new life? I've got choices. I've got options. And that, then you know you're well on your way to recovery when you're starting to look at your new future in a positive light. And the fifth E is energize your world. We take that plan and we begin to really execute it and work out all the action steps. What do you need to do? What's the next step? What resources do you need? How can you keep on track? If you slip, how can you change your plan to reschedule and keep moving? And the most important part of the energize step is to reach back and begin to help others. When you take your focus off yourself, you are in true recovery. And so that's the magic. And the five E's worked for me, and now I broadcast it all over to try to help others to accelerate their recoveries as well.
Well, I can certainly, after hearing what your five E's are, I can see where you were able to really bounce back, because those are such important steps, and they have to all be taken. You can't just do two or three of them. And what I'm looking at also is they really need to be done in this sequence as well.
Absolutely, yes. The many people, they can jump to step three and say, okay, what is. But if they're still harboring resentments and anger, let's just say you've got a broken relationship and you just thought it was going to work and it didn't. And so you just push it all under the rug, and then you start, 2 months later you start dating and there you go. Well, those anger and resentment and those untended feelings are going to surface in your new relationship. So leaping ahead to the third step without clearing out all the old baggage is going to jeopardize and actually slow your recovery. And also, it actually could make you worse, because if you go to a new relationship then you might even be more down if that one doesn't work. So you're affecting yourself and your new partner, and you might even be more depressed that you know, no relationship will ever work because you started too soon. So I really think they need to be done in that order. And within the program, there's about 7 action steps under each of the 5 E's, so that it's a very it's very step-by-step process that can guide you, and you'll begin to see shifts. And it's really excellent. I love working with people and just watching them from week to week just to see what they realize and what they're changing. So all 5 steps are needed, and in that order. That's the I know it works.
I believe it. I believe it. And, you know, as I'm listening to you, too, and step number 2 is extremely important. And I can also see, and I can say this from myself, using a similar system, that I have to go to step 2 to eliminate more than once. Because I can get to the envision, and all of a sudden, stuff comes up. It's like, oh, man, okay, back to step 2 again, and eliminate more feelings.
Exactly. Once you, well, you honor your feelings. I think it's really important, because I know people say, oh, you get a stiff upper lip, and you just let it pass, and do all, that's fine for a cocktail party, but in your real life, 24/7, these tools can be used over and over. So I like your analogy in that you can cycle back to 2, because everything in life begins to build on this. So if in the beginning you were a victim, then you got rid of that. But now you've got anger. Well, you've got to deal with your anger. And then if you deal with your anger, then maybe there's resentment. And, you know, so that comes up too. So, but what I found is that you catch yourself much sooner.
Yes.
You say, wait a minute, does this feeling, does this thought, does this action serve me? And you're like, well, no, it's taking me in a completely wrong direction. And I've had people, in one of my programs in the book, it says, how much time did you spend last week being angry? Okay, how much time did you spend last month being angry? And you're like, my God, I've been angry for 60 hours. You know, so,
yeah.
And you never put a number on it because you're just doing that. So when you realize that every hour that you're angry is every hour that you're not happy or playing with your dog or doing something, you realize my life is ticking away while I'm wasting my time. So you catch yourself much sooner, and that's really the power.
Yeah.
Once you go through step 2, it's available to you to go back and, you know, and even less damaging feelings, just, you know, just a little discourtesy or something.
Right.
It doesn't even have to be a major feeling. You can say, wait a minute, why was I not courteous to that cashier? What's going on? And you, every time, even if you catch yourself even being rude, you're like, whoa, why am I doing this? And you can use the tool over and over to get yourself back on track and just be more level and balanced and stable. And actually, you can be happy a good deal of the time. And I know it sounds really trite, and when I was in the depths of it, I didn't want to hear it either. But now that I am where I am, I realize that I can control my reaction.
Yes.
Think of yourself driving down the road, and we've got the most horrible traffic in the country here. And people cut you off all the time and never use your turn signal, because if you try to use your turn signal, they cut you off even faster. So it's really an aggressive driving environment. Now, you can get in your car and use it as a missile, or you can get in your car and just be laid back and let whatever happens, and you build yourself some safe space. So people cut you off, you can be angry, or people cut you off and you can just let them go. And you control that every day. And I didn't realize that. I just thought that my temper was what it was.
Yeah.
And I was a victim and a slave to my temper. Well, I wish I would have learned that decades ago, but now I know.
Now you know, exactly. And, you know, your life is different now. And for some reason, whatever it was, you had to go through all those steps that you did to get to where you are now. But what I'm also seeing is the benefit off that, although looking back, it's like, whoa, you were really, you know, in a place, in a dark, dark hole. But now, look at all the people that you're helping because of that. And that's basically back into that 5th step, isn't it?
Absolutely. No, I'm very,
yeah.
And the way I look at it is I'm very resistant to the people that are telling me that it was all for the best. I still bristle at them. I was like, I almost died. I was having panic attacks. No, I do not agree that it was all for the best. What I'm doing, though, is making the best of it.
Yes.
And I think that's where the power is, and that, and the one of the other pieces, I have 21 stupid things to say to people. It's in the book. And I had people tell me that I killed my cat because she picked up my grief. And I was like, okay, if you don't think I've been through enough, I think it's important that you tell me I killed my cat too.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
What else can I take? So there's a whole list of things that people say. They're unskilled. And even though they mean well, they can still do damage. So I encourage anybody who's facing loss is to build themselves a big acrylic shield around them and try to get through to people's intentions. If people are trying to comfort you, give them a break, even though they say really stupid things like, it's all for the best, or I know just how you feel. I'm like, there's no way you know how I feel. Did your mother die? Oh, no. Well, then believe me, you have no idea.
Yeah.
And did your fiancé betray you when your mother was dying? Well, no, but I know how you feel. No, you don't. So, you know, and then it just takes time is another really bad thing.
Uh-huh.
And another really horrible thing to say to someone either after the loss of a spouse or the breakup of a relationship is, oh, you'll find someone even better. So there's just I just caution everyone if they're going through some tough times that
okay.
Even well-meaning people
I have a question.
Yeah.
I have a question. Did you find somebody better?
I'm in the process. One of the things I advise is to take the time and build the space.
Yeah.
And I'm kind of a compulsive personality. And what I was afraid to do is that if I found a man who was quite attractive and quite, you know, got a life of his own, that I would jump into his life and my life once again would disappear.
Ah.
That's what I did the first time.
Yeah.
I completely wrapped my life around him, undoing his business and his three kids and his ex-wife and all, you know, I was supporting all of that nonsense and kind of was drifting along with my own life because my life was meshed with his. And I knew that if I got back in too soon, I would repeat that. And so what I've painstakingly done is to build a whole new life so that when a man joins my life, it's going to be at a partnership where I have a life and he has a life and we have a joint life. But I was very, and I caution all of my people to not jump into a new relationship because I would lose myself. And it was really important for me to be happy and whole as a single.
Wow, Donna Marie, this has been such a great conversation. And I know that our listening audience, that there are so many out there that are needing to hear that there is hope, needing to hear that they aren't alone. And although their experiences may be totally different than yours, there's still that the same, you know, many of us have to go into that deep, dark hole, and I'm sure that there are listeners right now that are feeling that that's where they are, but just by talking to you, knowing that there is a way out, there is hope, and there is that aha moment that immediately you know when the shift happens, and you're on your way back up to a life that is very fulfilling. And I really appreciate you just really instilling that into our listening audience. What is your website address, Donna?
For the book, I have autographed copies of the book available at bouncingbackfromloss.com.
Mm-hmm.
And then my daily blog is at bouncingbacknow.com.
Great. There you are, listeners. Check out the book. It's called, as Donna Marie said, Bouncing Back from Loss. There's a lot of great information in it and a lot of hope as well. Donna, thank you very much for time and spending it with us.
Thank you, Irene. It's been my great pleasure.
This is Irene Watson with Inside Scoop Live. Thanks for listening. Bye for now.